The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 21st of May, 2026. Thanks so much for tuning in. Great to have you on board. We've got another busy show for you. You know yourself. And the lines are open for you right now. You contact us in so many different ways. A lot of contact actually comes in through our social medias as well. But the most effective way live, though it's all good, is WhatsApps and texts. 086 60 25000. That is that WhatsApp and text number. You can give us a call too at 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, if it suits you, maybe you're at home, working at home, working in the home, you know, all of those combinations, well, fire up your smart TV, open the YouTube app, and you can see the show, most of the guests and all that kind of jazz. Just search Highland Radio Ireland, and you can carry us around in your mobile devices on that app. And we're all over Facebook as well. And yeah, just to recap that request we played just before 9 o'clock for a very special man that means an awful lot to a person, that means an awful lot to us too. Charlie Kelly is celebrating his birthday. Charlie Kelly of Letterkenny. I think you would, many of you would know Charlie with his many years of dedication to On Post, etc. Well, he celebrates his 80th birthday today, an octogenarian. And there's lots of love coming in to you, Charlie, from Aisling and Kevin, also from Oisin, Angela, Kaylin, Oren and Ava, and from Dara, Claire, Grace, Peter, Dara and Elena. Incredibly popular man this morning for requests. So Charlie, have a wonderful day, and I do hope, and I'm sure, you are going to be spoiled absolutely blooming rotten. Right, let's look at the newspapers this morning. The Tyrconnell Tribune is out today. It's understood that there has been renewed investor interest in Finn Harps Football Club in recent months. Well, you know what I mean? Can you imagine? A club like Finn Harps is, on a day-to-day basis, just trying to raise and keep enough money to stay active with all the expenses of players' wages, the ground development, obviously, that's upcoming, travelling to away games and all that jazz. So any injection of finances, I presume, would be seen as a good thing. Well, Declan Kerr writes that speculation that a business interest from the Philippines visited the club recently, but that's not confirmed. According to a source with close links to the club, an interested party from abroad has had some level of engagement with Harps in the last month, but whether anything comes of that remains to be seen. Rumours about potential parties interested in a takeover or investment have been circulating for quite a while, with the club's financial footing always a source of concern, with poor attendance, as it's described here, at their home matches for the past 3 years. Finn Harps are currently not in a good place, sitting second from bottom of the second tier of League of Ireland football. The Donegal News today and the Derry News today reflect on what we have been talking about an awful lot because of its significance, and that's the very tragic loss of three young male lives on our roads last weekend. And the funerals have and will take place yesterday and today. Broken-hearted loved ones have shed tears and said prayers for two young men who sadly lost their lives in a weekend Donegal Road tragedy. Leon Shovlin, just 27, Keelan Rush, 30, were killed when their car was in collision with another vehicle on the N15 near Barnesmore on Saturday, and their funerals were held yesterday, just hours apart, with Leon's devastated parents and Keelan's heartbroken family comforted during emotional mass ceremonies. And now, it doesn't get any easier from here, not for quite some time, and I'm sure their family networks and the community will keep an eye on them, because sometimes after a funeral, it's not going to be the case in this situation, but you know, people can tend to, you know, sort of get on with their own lives, but we need, or they need, continued and ongoing support, which I've no doubt they will get. The Derry News: the young Derry man who tragically lost his life in a road trip traffic collision in Muff will be laid to rest today. Ash Harkin, who was just 25, died in that crash that occurred on the R238 at Ardmore Muff at approximately 9:45 on Saturday night. Moving on to the Irish Times now, and there's growing fears of deeper job cuts across the tech sector. The tech companies hired extensively, you know, and I think they probably hired perhaps more people than they needed to hire. And part of me thinks this whole AI thing is an excuse. They're using it as an excuse to thin out their staff. I'm not really quite sure AI is taking all of these jobs. I think it's just being used, at least in some cases, as an excuse to address the overhiring that happened in the past, because there's no doubt there was overhiring. But anyway, there are, as I say, growing fears of deeper job cuts across the tech sector. And why is this? Well, no formal indication has been given to government by the tech companies that more job cuts are coming. It's understood that industry figures have privately warned ministers and officials that as many as 80% of tech jobs globally could be lost over the coming decade. Three sources across government who spoke privately due to the sensitivity of the issue confirmed there is an expectation that further job cuts will be announced in the coming months as the rollout of artificial intelligence technology takes its toll. And as I say, I think that's part of it. I also think part of it is them thinning out staff. But I wonder what that means now for someone with an interest in tech or who is studying who's studying in that area. You know, is there uncertainty about whether there will be a job into the future? Things have changed so drastically over the last 3 years. Like, you could have thought you had a job for life at the start of your course, and now, just a short couple of years later, you might be saying to yourself, well, I'm going to have to pivot here, or I'm going to have to do something else. Is there going to be a job for me? I'm sure that thought process is out there for some. A lot about RTE and pain. We've covered an awful lot of that in the programme. But just one thing that came from yesterday's conversations that I think might resonate with a lot of you out there, because you do text in this show and read many of the texts out, concerned at the bias or claims of bias within RTE, how certain topics are covered. They're covered, some of you might feel, they're covered in maybe a very lefty, woke way, or they could be covered in a very pro-government way. As I say, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that's some of the communications that we might get. And at least one TD is of a similar view. RTE's Kevin Backhurst, and this is in the Irish Daily Mail, RTE's Kevin Backhurst has said he will consider auditing its coverage to ensure there is a balance of viewpoints on air. At the Oireachtas Media Committee yesterday, independent Senator Ronan Mullen told Mr. Backhurst that on issues such as immigration, free speech and trans issues, there was a sameness of viewpoint. Mr. Mullen criticised the Today with Dave McCullough radio show for featuring two guests advocating for international surrogacy. There was not one single representative of ethical concerns about the international surrogacy, commercialization of children and so on. Whether you agree or disagree with me on this issue, that is shocking lack of balance, he said. Mr. Mullen Mr. Mullen pointed to Mailbag, which aired from 1982 to 1996 and featured presenter Arthur Murphy reading out letters from the public as an example of RTE airing voices from all sectors of society. The senator added that there was a failure to self-reflect at RTE and that it was a cultural issue that needed to be addressed. And there is stilted conversation. You know, it's easing up a little bit now, but for a long time, if you had a particular point of view, the presenter would shoot you out of it. And I don't mean a very controversial, harmful, hateful point of view, but a point of view that maybe went against, you know, the mainstream or whatever it might be. You know, you would be, you wouldn't get equal treatment. I would hope independent media does it better than that. I think we do. I think we give a platform here for people with different views for respectful conversations, and we should certainly expect that from the national media as well. I often do wonder how much food is dumped out of supermarkets, especially, you know, and I think I mentioned this on the show last week by coincidence. Do you know when you go and say pick up a tub of coleslaw, and the best before date is tomorrow, and you go at the back and there's about 30 or 40 of them and they're all the best before date tomorrow, and you go, there's no way they're going to sell all of that. And that's just one example. It could be bread, it could be whatever it might be. A lot of meat, you see a lot of meat with very short best before dates, you know, 1 or 2 days. What happens to all of that food? Now, I do know there are some schemes whereby, what is that called? Shannon, is Shannon there? No, there's, anyway, I'll get to it, but you can go on an app and you can get a bag of food that's sort of much cheaper, but kind of in date. I can't remember what it's called, but I will get that for you. But what happens to the rest of the food? Well, Irish supermarkets, and this is in the Irish Independent, could be prevented from throwing away edible unsold food and instead be required to donate it under a new proposal aimed at reducing waste, so compelled to donate it. Large supermarkets in France have not been allowed to destroy unsold food since 2006. The companies must instead enter agreements with charities and food banks to redistribute the surplus. Fianna Fáil TD Nessa O'Carroll has said Irish supermarkets should follow the same protocol and be obligated to work with organisations to redistribute surplus food to people who need it most. Now, that could be through charities. It could be through food banks. Now, I think there are some companies in this county that do work with some of these organisations, but maybe put it on a legal footing. What do you think? Maybe you work within a food bank and think that's a fantastic idea. We shouldn't be dumping edible food when people are hungry, should we? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. The Irish Farmers Journal: sheep prices in some mart sales have increased by anywhere from €5 to €20 a head as buying ramps up ahead of the Islamic religious festival of Eid al-Adha. I know what that is. It'll come to me again. It's going to be one of those mornings, isn't it? Demand has been boosted by interest from live exporters purchasing sheep for export to a number of European markets, as well as North Africa, and wholesalers exporting sheep in carcass form. So a lift there at the mart for sheep, obviously. And in the Irish Daily Star, a victim of child sex abuser Patrick Sharkey yesterday told the former teacher, "Rot in hell." Sharkey was remanded in custody at Letterkenny Circuit Court and will be sentenced next month after admitting to 132 sexual offences against 19 young boys over a 25-year period. The defendant preyed on his victims during his time as a teacher in Coleraine, where he would regularly take them to his parents' house in Clonmany for extracurricular activities. Several of Sharkey's victims read out harrowing victim impact statements outlining the deep and lasting consequences of his offending. "Finally, the victims will get justice after all these decades," one man said, adding that he has been mentally and emotionally scarred for 40 years. Turning to Sharkey, who sat without emotion in the dock, the man said, "I hope you rot in hell. This, I hope, is the end of it." Another victim recalled how the predator used power and control to prey on his victim. He had told how Sharkey had befriended his family and would often call into his home before he robbed me of my safe place. The level of manipulation and control and getting at the families, and 25 years of imposing this on innocent young victims. You can't help but share the sentiments of one of those victims there. That is Patrick Sharkey, who is yet to be sentenced. Maybe that's a case that you want to talk about. I don't know. Maybe you are one of those victims and you feel it's time that people understand precisely what these people are actually capable of. I don't know. It's completely up to you. I'd never impose, particularly at this time. Just to let you know that the latest episode of the Greg Hughes podcast is released tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. It's on our website, highlandradio.com, on the listen back section. But also you can subscribe on Spotify and iTunes. Just search the Greg Hughes podcast. And our guest tomorrow is our own Joe Doherty Dex, from Letterkenny, of course. And Joe, in our conversation, speaks incredibly frankly about his journey with alcohol. From the beginning, when it was all grand, to how it got its claws into him, and his three stints in rehab. And also to, it's a different story, because often, and because it is the lived experience, when you talk about alcohol, someone loses everything and just hits the bottom. They lose their relationships, their family, you know, their money, all that type of stuff. That's not the case with Joey. Fantastic people around him that stuck by him. And he's almost 3 years now sober. And it's a fantastic story from beginning to end. So that's the podcast. And fair play to Joe for speaking out. It's not easy, but I'm delighted to see the level of support. We posted a clip of it. I'm delighted to see the level of support and love being expressed. So that's the Greg Hughes podcast with Joe Dex. It's available for you tomorrow after 11 a.m. Right, now I'm going to Fianna Fáil councillor Donal Mandy Kelly now. Donald, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
Great to chat to you. Right, we know now the work is ongoing, even though there has been some opposition and various proposals in terms of active travel in and around Letterkenny. And it is meaning, and it has meant, that the road layouts are being changed. And you've been contacted by a few people, particularly in the bigger vehicles, with concerns about how the road layout might affect them getting around the place.
Yeah, that's correct, Greg. And listen, I've been contacted with these people way back at the start when the Convert Road actually was taking place, and I alerted our own team within the Roads and Donegal County Council and Road Design about the concerns that operators had, such as lorry drivers, rigid drivers, Arctic drivers, and on top of that, our bus operators. Where the narrowing down of these carriageways is causing a serious problem for them. Recently there, I've been getting calls in relation to the hospital roundabout and particularly the Ballyrain roundabout, and even more recently here now, the junction at Thomas Keyes' shop as well, that's where they've seen it's been narrowed down as well. But I'll go back to the hospital roundabout, Greg, and you know, I suppose to start off, Greg, there's one thing we need to be very clear on here, is that we're a county that relies on transport delivery by lorries, particularly. We don't have the privilege of rail. But what the transport people are telling me is that it's making it more difficult to get in and around Letterkenny, particularly doing deliveries and the bus operators going to and from school in particular. Now, the hospital roundabout, coming down now from the Glencairn Road, these heavy vehicles is not going to get around to turn up by the mountaintop direction, the Kilmacrenan Road, without having to cross the white line onto oncoming traffic. Now, the active travel at the time was laid out to provide road safety, but in the views of the heavy vehicles now that's using these routes within our town, it's causing more of an issue than safety now. So, you know, it has to be re-looked at, Greg, going forward.
Yeah, and now I know the roads engineer, at least one of them, has said to you that, you know, when the cones and other restrictions are lifted, it might not be quite as narrow as it might appear. But I imagine professional drivers are factoring all that in. You know, they're not silly. They know what's going to be permanent and they know what's temporary. It seems very strange that we should design a road that really, if you were to apply the law, is forcing drivers of big vehicles to break the law to the point whereby, if a guard was behind them and you cross into to other traffic, theoretically, I presume, you are, you know, breaking the law.
Yeah, without a doubt, Greg. And I mean, that's something these operators don't want to and shouldn't have to do. But at the minute, the way things have been laid out, they're left with no choice. And yeah, like, that was brought to my attention in relation to cones and other obstacles that they set out at the minute for the safety of the workers there. But these operators are telling me, even with these removed, it's still going to be the same outcome. They're still going to have to cross the white line. I mean, take for Ballyrain roundabout now, for an example, Greg, and there's no obstacles there. And the heavy vehicles, the lorries, even your rigid lorries are still having to come out and cross the white line going up there onto oncoming traffic, you know, and that should not be the case. You know, I just can't get around on my own head, Greg, why we need such a wide footpath and cycleway. It's going round and round my head every time I look at it. As why is the cycleway and a footpath now wider than the actual carriageway where people are supposed to drive on? You know, for me, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And I suppose and a lot of things, common sense has gone out the window for me. But it has to be re-looked at, Greg, for road safety.
Yeah. I presume, and we've seen it in different places. We've seen it on the four lanes. We've seen it there on just out towards Donegal Town at Capri. It's no accident that roads are narrowed, I don't believe. It's part of traffic management. It's to slow vehicles down, is it not?
That's for sure, Greg, and that's what we've been told all along. But Greg, listen, I'll give an example, and we take for Funtown for an example there. And there was people on your radio the week before last giving out about the speed. Now that carriageway was narrowed down, and we were told at the time that it was to reduce the speed of the road, but instead it has done the complete opposite. Yeah. It has increased the speed. And the footpaths and the cycleways have widened there, and I'd be through Funtown regular, and there's nobody using them. And I mean, we're told the same thing in Letitia, that this is to reduce the speed of cars. Take the four lane, for example, Greg. The four lane is an absolute disaster from start to finish. And, you know, one might question, you know, have we learned anything going forward? Because, in my eyes, the active travel around Letitia is doomed to fail. I think it's money that has been wasted that it could have been spent on better things elsewhere, and that's my own personal opinion. Now, I voted against this from the get-go, as you know, Greg, and I still, my view or opinion on it hasn't changed. And, you know, they tell me that more cyclists will use it, more walkers will use it. The same people's going to use it, Greg, because I'll tell you, we had 2 weeks of fine weather there back about a fortnight ago, and I was in Letitia nearly every day of the week, and I haven't seen many people using active travel lanes on bicycles. We put on electric bikes there at the back of AIB Bank, which we launched a number of months ago. And to this day, not one of them has been used. And I stand to be corrected in that. So I don't know where this is all going to end up, Greg. But for me, I think there needs to be a full review of the active travel going forward. And I'm glad that today, Greg, we're going into a meeting now at 11 o'clock with the Transport Forum operators. And I look forward to hearing their views and opinions on this.
Yeah, we do.
Because I know that the operators that are ringing me, they're not happy with the layout of Letitia at the minute.
Okay, we look forward to hearing what they have to say as well. Thanks very much indeed, Fianna Fáil Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly. What are your views in relation to that if you're in and around Letitia? Listen, the majority of you at some point or other, if you're going somewhere else, has to go through Letterkenny. Well done, Mandy, says a listener, highlighting the ridiculous work going on at Ballyrane School and Thomas Keyes roundabout. Imagine narrowing the roads on the busiest roads leaving the town. Are they crazy in their road design? They are strangling the town. It's an absolute joke. Another, it's the same on the back road in Letterkenny. The front wheels of the bus have to go out over the other side to get around. Two buses have to stop to allow the other past. Whatever do you know what? We've been talking quite an awful lot about road safety and the three things: driver, vehicle, roads. Like, how can you design a road whereby a vehicle has to cross into oncoming traffic or cross over lanes? You are designing something that's brand new, that is compelling people using it to breach the rules of the road, i.e., you know, say you're doing your... Actually, do you know what? Here's an interesting question for some of you out there, and I know they do listen. If you are involved in sort of training or preparing bus drivers for the test, if a bus driver uses this new layout and they cross into oncoming traffic because they have to get around a roundabout, do they fail their test? Would that be seen as a failure, or is there latitude because of a road layout? I'd be very interested for those of you involved in sort of the testing or the preparing for a test, what would happen if a bus driver on their test was forced to cross over into an oncoming lane because the road was designed so narrow. Would they fail? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Now, we're joined on the programme by Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, spokesperson on Fisheries and Marine. Good morning to you, for Sinn Féin, that is, of course. Good morning to you, Padraig.
Good morning, Greg.
Before we get to that very important local issue, if you don't mind, last night or yesterday evening, there was a high-profile vote on the sanctions against the State of Israel Bill 2025-2026. And the bill brought forward by People Before Profit was calling for imposing comprehensive, full economic sanctions on Israel, effectively proposing a complete ban on dealings in state-linked economic activity. We had Independent Councillor Declan Breer on the show yesterday imploring Donegal TDs and others to support this, to send a message, obviously, as his wife is was detained by Israel. It was defeated, perhaps not a surprise. Did it come as a... You backed this bill, I believe. Your party backed this bill. Did that come as a disappointment to you?
Yeah, and it's worse than you mean. The bill from Richard Boyd Barrett was calling for sanctions against, you know, what is a rogue state. And I go back, I actually spoke last night outside the Dáil about this. And 1984, go back to 1984, many of your listeners will know of the famous story of the Dun Stores workers, mostly women and some men. And they refused to handle fruit from the rotten apartheid state in South Africa at that time. And they faced real difficulties. Their jobs were threatened. But eventually, there was a groundswell of support in Ireland, and our government stepped up and they took sanctions against the apartheid state of South Africa, led the way. Ireland led the way, and eventually the world followed. And then, as you know, that apartheid state was brought down. And here we are. And not only will our government not support the bill last night, which would be full sanctions against Israel, the state of Israel, but they won't even back the Occupied Territories Bill. And under international law, the Occupied Territories, so basically Israeli settlers have illegally, it's a war crime under international law to occupy territory as they have, just taking it over. And we are doing business and commerce with what is a war crime in international law. Couldn't be more straightforward. So this government really are really, really weak when it comes to...
Yeah, but you talked about us taking a lead with apartheid. I mean, the government's position is it not, that rather than sort of taking this unilateral domestic approach, that they try and position themselves as the drivers for an EU-wide approach? And you know, maybe that would have more of an impact on Israel. Is there not some merit to that? You know, what impact would we have? I mean, obviously, it would demonstrate the view of many within this country, but is it not a better position to try and get the EU to take a broader approach and, as I say, have that real impact on Israel?
We didn't wait for anybody else back in the 1980s when we took a proud stand against apartheid in South Africa. And our problem is that, you know, it has to start somewhere. Somebody has to make a stand here and lead the way. And I believe when that's done, Spain, Slovenia, there are a number of countries, Norway, who support the direction we're going in. We have to start here. And that's why, your listeners, many of them would have seen the imagery overnight of 15 Irish citizens, human rights activists, who were kidnapped in international waters and were forced to kneel down, hands behind their back, and humiliated with an Israeli minister waving an Israeli flag, and absolutely disgusting. And the reason why Israel behaves like that, because they'd never pay a price. Europe and Ireland does trade and commerce with a rotten genocide state, and it is shameful.
I know this would be a question for government, but maybe you have an opinion. Why is there such a resistance within Ireland to take this stand then? Where is the pressure coming from? Why is our airspace continued to be used? Why is Shannon Airport still being used? You know, where is the influence? What are we afraid of? Is it pressure from the United States? Is it lobbying from Israel? This has to be coming from somewhere, surely, because we've seen other countries, you mentioned Spain, have been the real leaders in relation to this. So what hold over Ireland is there that we are so resistant to, you know, those three things? There's more, but just to mention those three things that are highlighted there.
Yeah, I think our big problem is our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. He's really determined to be in the big boys club in Europe, as he sees it. So it's not even just the United States, it's Europe. And they're heavily influenced by that establishment, Ursula von der Leyen.
But you're suggesting there that this, our entire policy, is almost being determined by one person's ego.
I think Micheál Martin I think he sees himself as Europe's representative in Ireland rather than Ireland's representative in Europe. And I've felt that for a long time. I find it I can't even find words actually to describe the failure to pass the Occupied Territories Bill. Whatever about the bill last night by Richard Boy Barrett, which would be sanctions against the state of Israel, the Occupied Territories Bill is absolutely grounded in international law, that you're saying you've occupied these territories and you have taken their lands and you have set up businesses and we are not doing trade in the occupied territories. We continue to do trade with Israel, but we're not doing trade in the occupied territories. They
Okay.
won't even do that. The most basic sanction on Israel, they will not take those steps. And I think history will judge us terribly.
Right, you raised the issue yesterday. This is why we invited you on, but just I wanted to reference that because there's a lot of interest in it locally and across the country as well, and perhaps even outside. But you raised the issue of delays in relocating families at Elm Park, Bonkran. And now we'll go back and remember the story of these devastating floods, and that in and of itself was a significant problem, and promises and visits to the site of flood mitigation and all this type of stuff. And then it turned out that these properties also have defective concrete blocks, and their preference, I presume, is that these nine families get new houses but get them out of a dangerous floodplain, as has been described. James Brown took a particular interest in this. I did question him when he was up here. He knew about the story. I think he may have even visited the site. So it seemed like there was some progress and the right mood music, but here we are. There seems to have been a stall. What's going on?
Yeah, well, first of all, great credit to the residents there. First of all, they had to deal with the devastating flood of 2017. The imagery of the Crana River cascading through their houses is unforgettable. They were very lucky that there wasn't a loss of life on that occasion. So they then campaigned for flood defences, but on that journey, and they won that campaign to have flood defences built to protect their homes. Their houses should never have been built. They were built in a floodplain. It was a terrible planning decision, terrible failure in the planning system. So then they discovered, of course, that they have defective concrete blocks. They then were forced, when they engaged with the authorities, to go through the testing. Every single one of the houses were tested. All of the houses have to be demolished. So it makes no sense to rebuild on this dangerous floodplain. It's absolute eminent common sense that they be relocated rather than waste the money to rebuild on a floodplain. So Minister James Brown met the families last year in Lifford in County House. Boxer Mourne, who's the OPW minister responsible for floods, he came out and met them on site there a few months ago. But the problem is, Minister James Brown, Minister for Housing, he had signed off on relocation before Christmas. Really welcome news ahead of Christmas last year. We were hoping that we'd get good news for Christmas. But here we are now, it's in June, almost in June, and we still don't have details of the scheme. Families are really anxious. All the TDs in Donegal have backed the families because it's just eminent common
So, what
sense.
did
It's
you
a
get back
cross-party
from
issue.
them in relation to this? Did the government have an opportunity to respond to you?
Yeah, so I actually spoke to, well, I raised it with the Taoiseach, as you know, yesterday directly in the Dáil. I want to keep this matter at the top of the agenda of government. But I spoke to Minister Kevin Boxer-Mourne and Minister James Brown personally last night, and I appealed to both of them, please come forward
What
with a
did he say?
scheme.
What happens in a conversation like that?
Kevin Boxer-Mourne, if I've been honest, is more engaging. He gets it.
But you're there, right? You're saying to, because I always be curious of these conversations. You'll say chat to James Brown. You say, James, you remember how you signed off on this before December? It's nearly June now. What's the crack? What's happening? What does he say? Did they say, well, I'll have to get in contact with my colleagues at the Housing Department, or do they just eye and nod you? Well, what happens? Because you've got the man face to face, or ear to mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's my job, obviously, to raise the issue of the residents and to try and get this over the line. I am deeply frustrated. I'm not gonna, you know, I, I'm not gonna. I mean, I think it's appalling that we're now talking about this, almost 6 months later. James Brown acknowledged that. He acknowledged that it has taken too long. His junior minister, Christopher O'Sullivan, was working on this with Boxer-Mourne before Christmas. I asked Minister James Brown, please now. His officials, I'm going to be honest about this, I don't have great confidence in the Department of Housing officials who work on defective concrete blocks. I believe that they've never forgiven the people of Donegal for the stand that we've taken. I believe that you need a strong minister to stand up to them and get them to do their job.
Okay.
And I asked them to do that last night.
We'll see what comes of it. Thank you very much for your time and also covering both of those issues with us. I do appreciate it. That's Sinn Féin spokesperson on Fisheries and Marine, Party Whip to Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. I'm joined in studio by Hugo Wanko. Good morning to you, Hugo.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. And also with us is Tafara Changamiri. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
And yeah, both gentlemen are from the African People Collaboration Donegal. That's the APCD. Right. Now, there is an Africa Day commemoration sports fiesta upcoming, and it's open to all the public. Hugo, what's happening on the day?
Yes, we're trying to promote promote integration and social inclusion in Donegal. Also, it's sort of an African Solidarity and Unity Day. We want to highlight social development and the contribution of African people in and around Donegal. We want to encourage the youth to participate in community development, also strengthen community cooperations.
Mm. And I presume you're also hoping that those within the African community who aren't engaging yet might see this as an opportunity to come out.
Of course. A lot of people, we have a great number of African community in Donegal, and this is an opportunity for them to come out. There will be a talent show, there will be a fashion show, and also there'll be sports going on as well.
Yeah, Tafara, and what's your role on the day? Mm.
My role on the day is to coordinate the event. It's mostly to
which
coordinate.
Is a lot.
It's a lot.
I should mention, by the way, it's all at the Letterkenny Community Centre this Sunday, and it runs from 6 in the evening to 8. So it's a 2 hours. It's a small window and a lot going on, right?
No. It's starting actually at 3 p.m.
I don't know why I've got this. I've got this. So you run through it for me then, Tafara.
It's starting at 3 p.m. Till 1800 hours. Till 2000 hours. More or less about 5 hours. Mm. From 3, we'll start with the business showcase. Anyone from our community, anyone from the host community, anyone from our affiliated organizations can come through and showcase what they can do. It's about
so is that products, services, whatever it might be.
Yeah,
right?
Whatever you
this
can,
is what
you can
I do.
Do.
This is why you might be interested.
Yeah. Oh, so it's okay. About empowerment and letting our services be known. Yeah.
Okay, and then what happens?
So then
what's next?
Then there's a sports like volleyball, kids, African games, fashion show, etc. Then later in the evening, there's a soccer match and the presentation.
There's a lot going on. It's a good mix,
and
isn't
also
it?
Also, there's icing on the cake. There'll be food, African food around for testing and,
How important do you think it is, Hugo, that we continue to push for mutual understanding and integration? You know, because the second, third generation people here, and just in the last couple of years, it feels like sometimes there's a wedge being driven between us. Do you get a sense of that?
Not really, but
that's
I think there are new communities. Mm. So, for us to, we need to work to make sure that all the new communities, they're integrated in the community. There are people who look different than us. That's usually a challenge. But once we work together and do things together, everybody, that's actually the integration. Mm. It's not a rocket science, it's easy.
Yeah,
but we need to educate the community and make sure that everyone participates in this kind of events.
Tafara, how long have you been here?
3 years.
And how important in settling in has been sort of getting involved in community, getting involved, knowing your neighbours regardless of their background?
It's very important for myself, like. It's a new environment. It's a new cultures. So we try to learn and adapt to the culture around here. Yeah, I guess.
Because, you know, obviously there's your culture. I think you referred to the host culture, which I presume you
culture,
mean Ireland.
Yeah.
But then, and as Hugo has mentioned, there's a whole load of other cultures as well that are as alien to you as they are to me. Alien, but you know what I mean. So there's a lot of work to be done, Hugo.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. And it's not, this kind of work is not, I've seen people say, oh no, I don't work in that. It's not my job. All hand must be in deck to make sure that all the new people are welcomed, are integrated. It's not one particular organization that should do it. It's everybody. It's the businesses, it's the banks, it's all the community. It's the job of the community to make sure that everyone is integrated in their community.
Yes, so from 3 p.m., everything's happening in and around the Letterkenny Community Centre, isn't that correct?
Yes.
So that's this Sunday. So there's a lot going on, so maybe you can dip into Relay for Life, maybe dip over to Letterkenny Community Centre, get a full sense of what's going on. It's a day of social inclusion for everybody, involving singing, food, sport and fashion. It's open to all ages, and DLDC are backing this as well.
And the County Council as well.
And the County Council are always on hand to do that. And everybody is welcome. The showcase thing, Tafara, is everybody lined up or can someone still turn up on the day? Or
People can register before the day. Yeah, we can. We are accommodating almost everyone, but we need to register before.
Yeah, of course, you need to know what's needed and the numbers and all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And where do they contact for that? Is it the APCD?
Yeah, APCD.
We'll retain that number, which is the easiest thing, right?
Okay.
Okay, you go. Is there anything else you want to add? I think we've covered it. Just this Sunday,
just
the 24th.
Just quickly to acknowledge the support from DLDC and as well the County Council local integration team.
All right.
Yeah.
And either of you playing the football?
I'll be a coach.
That's one up from saying I'm going to be in goal.
Yeah, I'll be the coach and standby player coach.
Yeah, we'll be supporting. We'll be the fans
screaming from the sidelines. Yeah. Right, okay. Listen, lads, thanks very much indeed for calling in. That's Hugo and Tafara, both from the African People Collaboration Donegal APCD. If you're interested, get along to Letterkenny Community Centre on Sunday from 3 p.m. It runs until 8 in the evening. You've got social inclusion, of course. That's what it's all about, involving singing, food, sport and fashion, open to all ages, and an opportunity, if you wish, and it's all down to what you want to do, to meet your neighbours and to get to know people. A caller says, Greg, I work in tech. You're hitting the nail on the head. I've been calling a tech job dump for the last 2 years. They way overhired during COVID. AI is just a convenient excuse to dump people now while sounding like you're building value with AI. No major company is displacing trained workers for still experimental tech. That's just bad business. Yeah, and I think really they're relying on us to believe that we're just on the brink of, you know, cognitive thinking and robots about to take everything over. AI is grand, but I don't think it can replace a human in this area just yet. And I'm glad that you within the tech have kind of confirmed what I suspected, to be honest with you. On the issue of Israel, I agree wholeheartedly with Padraig. Israel are a rogue terrorist state and seem to do anything they like with impunity. Would Ireland get away with this? Their financial power, blackmailing and controlling of politicians is enormous and being used for evil means. They must be stopped, says a listener. Another, so proud of all the Irish on the Samud flotilla. God bless them all. It was horrible to see those images yesterday of them being humiliated and mistreated. How can we as a country, says another listener, give out about Israel when our Dáil voted against sanctions to Israel, taking or talking out of both ends as usual? And I hope I tease this out with Padraig and you have an understanding. The government's position is that they maybe can do more by leading out in Europe for broader sanctions against Israel. Whether you buy that or not, that, of course, is completely up to you. Mr. Martin is asking EU Council to discuss treatment of Irish people after being kidnapped. This meeting is not due until the 18th of June. Just imagine the reaction of our spineless government, as they describe them. Just imagine what the reaction would be if this was any other state. Our government have said it's unacceptable. Surely they are compelled to take immediate action if it's unacceptable. They are complicit, and that includes every representative and member of the coalition parties who remain silent on the ongoing slaughter in Gaza and now Lebanon. My next guest is Fiona Kerrigan from MUF, and has taken the very brave decision, I think anyway, to come in and speak on radio in an effort to raise awareness of Organ Donor Awareness Week, which is running until the 23rd of May. And we really appreciate you coming down, Fiona. It's not taken for granted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
And you have taken the decision to share your family's organ donation story, and this is in a hope of encouraging others to do so. So pick up where you're comfortable and tell us about your story.
Okay, so the story refers to our youngest son, Cormac, who died 3 years ago. He was 17, and it started on a, if you want me to go back to the day that it started on a Wednesday. Cormac had autism, and he went to school in Little Angels School up here in Letterkenny. So he went to school as usual, and I got a phone call at 3 o'clock from the school principal asking me to come up to the hospital because Cormac had been taken to hospital. Now, I don't remember anything about the conversation, but she just said, "We are very worried.
Wow.
Please come up." So we went up to the hospital. Cormac was in the recovery room in the accident and emergency. He was on a ventilator. This is a child that had walked out and onto the bus in the morning. And he was lying so still and so peaceful. Cormac had autism. Cormac, when he was walking, had his hands over his ears all the time.
Yeah.
And even when he was in bed at night, he would lie on his side with his hands on his ears. And in the recovery room, he was lying totally flat on his back, hands down by his side, eyes closed, and not a movement out of him.
How did that make you feel?
I was numb.
You hadn't seen him like that in a long time.
I hadn't seen him like that before, ever. As I say, he had autism. He was nonverbal. And I had never seen him like that. I knew when Alva had phoned me from the school and I was in the car, I knew that there was something badly wrong. I knew by the tone of her voice. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the details of what she was saying or anything, but
that
I remember.
That emotion remains. Yeah.
But it was just, I was like, oh God. But he was lying totally still. And the doctors were talking in the recovery room, but I was just like, what happened? What happened, Cormac? Mm-hmm. What happened? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't hear the words that they were saying were just bouncing off my face, my head. I couldn't. So anyway, eventually they took him up to the intensive care unit. And that was when the doctors told us that Cormac had had a heart attack. And that he was basically brain dead, that he wouldn't recover.
And there had been no foreshadowing of this. There was nothing to suggest that Cormac had a heart condition or...
There was no history of heart condition, and the post-mortem said that it wasn't a genetic heart condition. It wasn't something... There was nothing to indicate that Cormac had something wrong with his heart. Mm.
Because I have a picture of him and he is he looks a lovely, happy, handsome, healthy boy.
Healthy boy. They were the day that the heart attack happened, they were up at Godore, up at Bad Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
You know that boat?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was their day, his class's day to go out on the bus, and that is where they went. And his teacher, Micheál, and Micheál was his teacher, and Kevin and John were the two classroom assistants, and they took the boys on the bus that day, and that's where they went, and they said they had a great day.
Now, this came completely out of the blue.
Yeah.
Absolutely devastating. I would suggest the most traumatic day of your life, that before and to come. I cannot imagine what this might be like, because as I say...
It's a horror. It's an absolute horror.
But
you know
that this is what I think is really important for people to hear now, though, is in all of that, even at the point whereby, as you say, the words are bouncing off you, you sat in the family room there after being told that your son was not going to survive, and something caught your eye on the wall.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
You know, the family room in the ICU is just standard room. And like anywhere in a hospital, there's these health information posters, and you don't pay any heed to them because they're just words. But where I was sitting, like I'm looking at you now, there was a picture, a framed picture of a sunset. Mm. And it was like a bit of light in all the darkness. Like we had come to the hospital We had heard what happened to Cormac, and the staff were with us, and like they were traumatized as well. And then after everybody had gone, I was sitting, me and Michael were sitting in the wee family room, totally devastated. And I saw the sun set, and I thought, you know, because it said organ donation, have you considered this? And I thought, well, you know, maybe we could have something good out of this absolute horror. Because if you say you've no idea, and I hope you never do.
But did that sign tap into something that was already there, if you know what I mean? Or was it like sort of some sort of a blooming intervention or what? Like, had you been a family that, you know, you and your husband or partner had discussed donation?
We had never discussed donation. Struck me. Cormac had autism, and I never, you know, no, we had never, and all the deaths that we had experienced, we had never discussed organ donation.
And if the truth be told, I presume you would have been more concerned thinking about Cormac's care.
Exactly.
When you were no longer, yes. Certainly yes. Never something like this. That's
not
how,
at all. And especially when you send them out to school.
Yeah.
The Wayne went to school. That's, you know what I mean? The thing that you do every day. He was 17, you send him out to school. That's what you do. It had never occurred to me, but I was looking at the sunset and there was something in all of, because from we had arrived at the hospital, you know, it's all noise and doctors and computers, beeps that ventilator. I will never forget the ventilator. And so it's all of that. And then I was sitting there and it has gone quiet because the doctors are in looking, working with Cormac or whatever. Mm. And the family room, I was just sitting quiet and I looked at the sun and I thought, well, you know what? Something good could come out of this. Because Cormac was healthy, like, his organs would have been healthy. I says, well, the organs didn't have autism, so they'll not, you know. Do you know
what I mean? It's funny how things go through your mind, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. All the things that went through your head when you're, you know, when you're in that space.
So at that point, because certain hospitals would have someone on certain wards that deals in this type of thing. I'm not sure what the status is down there. What happens next?
So I had said to the one on the staff in the ICU, I says, you know, we're thinking we might donate some of Cormac's organs. And he was like, oh, that's great. He said, well, we get the forms. And I says, look, because this was the Wednesday night and we were still like, I says, look, can we leave it to the morning? And then I'll be sure.
Great.
You know,
great. Take the night. Yeah.
Once I had decided it, I thought, like, you know, why would you not? In the morning come, I talk to a few, I know a few people who work in the hospital, and they can't tell you yes or no, obviously. They can't tell you that, but I knew from what they were saying or not saying that it was the right thing to do. Okay. I knew it was
the right thing to do. So they were really careful not to try and guide
you. They can't guide you. This is because they can't be responsible then if you say, why did you make me do that? They can't do that.
Yeah. Shows great professionalism from them though, doesn't it?
The staff in Letterkenny Hospital are just something else. I have to say that. ICU, you know, you go in there in the morning, like you come in here to work. Like, you know, I was looking at them. It's just like, you know, what they're dealing with and how they deal with it is they're so professional. They are amazing.
Sure. And you said something a little earlier on too about how upset staff were. They feel this emotionally themselves. They understand
staff
the loss.
In the school,
in the school, but even the hospital.
The hospital, like the hospital, I suppose they deal with it more. The staff in the school, I felt more for. They came over after school. They had to go into school the next day. You know, Cormac was sitting. They had come back to the school from Bad Eddie's. Great day out.
Yeah.
And Cormac was sitting on a beanbag in the wee sentry corner of the classroom, flicking through a book while he was waiting, because they take the students out one at a time. Yeah. There's six students in the class. So he was the last to go out. He was sitting flicking through a book and the staff noticed the head tilted to the side and his lips went blue.
Oh, no, God help them.
So, and they had to go into school the next day.
Yeah.
Because apart from anything else, Little Angels is a special school.
Yeah.
The children in there need routine. They need to know that everything's the same every day, so they can't say, no, I'm not going in today because I'm traumatised.
Fiona, when it was eventually settled on that Cormac was to donate his organs,
yes.
Does that influence, you know, his life support? So, in other words, the timeline of when or not, what would have been keeping him alive?
Yeah.
Can they sort of say, whilst things are organised, that they will maintain his functions?
So they were keeping him on the life support for us anyway, to give us time to say goodbye, you know. Now, they don't actually maybe necessarily say that.
But that's what's happening.
But that's what's happening. So he came in on the Wednesday afternoon. So he was kept on the life support until Friday. Once I had said on the Thursday that we wanted to donate his organs, then they have to put things in place. And I'm sure that affects the life support and what they're giving him and, you know, all of that. And that puts that all in place.
And in terms of, and again, I don't want to be hurtful, but I just want everyone to understand. And sometimes if you're ever in this situation, and we hope people wouldn't be, but these were the questions that they might ask themselves. How is it determined, or do you determine what organs of Cormac can be donated?
They decide that like organ donation doesn't happen with everybody. It depends on the circumstances of the death, and it depends what organs. So in Cormac's case, they kept the heart for the post-mortem.
Mm-hmm.
So they donated one lung and two kidneys.
Okay.
The liver apparently had, in their words, taken an awful hit when the heart stopped.
The trauma of it. Yeah,
to the body. And one of the lungs had an infection, which apparently is quite normal when you're on a ventilator. It can happen.
Yeah. So that was acquired, probably.
They couldn't take that lung, so they took one lung and two kidneys. And they, it starts a whole process. And you have to remember, too, that they are getting somebody ready somewhere in the country to come in to hospital.
Some other one's life's about to change.
Yes, yeah. Somebody else's life's about to change. And this is the thing about it. Cormac wasn't coming back. And nothing was going to bring him back.
Yeah.
So why let them healthy organs? He's 17. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink.
Mm.
He walked for miles every day. So why let them organs go with him? So they get the organ donor transplant Ireland people come then. They came up on the Friday. Evening, because they can't do the transplant. You know, they can't take the organs out until they need the theatre to be not in use.
Yes,
so they wait until it would have been on the Friday night. We left Letterkenny. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and they were just going to take them down then to do what they were going to do.
So, do you say your goodbyes to Cormac before he's taken to the?
I can't imagine,
Fiona, what you went through. It's
Cormac.
So,
well, you see, your body, you go into a kind of a
state.
I don't know. It's not fight or flight, but you just, it's like an out-of-body experience and you're doing stuff and you don't know. But I knew on Wednesday night that Cormac was gone because he was too peaceful. He was too still.
Can I ask a question, if you don't mind? Because, you know, there was someone who was close to us who was suffering from a condition that, you know, you almost looked and you'd be they'd be defined by it. I don't want to give too much information away, but, you know, like how you talked about how Cormac would always have his hands on his ears or what have you. But was there a peacefulness that you saw in him that you've got comfort from?
Yeah.
That, in other words, you saw your boy, your baby, but it was a complete... He was not rid of it, because that sounds a thing, and I don't mean that.
But it was very hard, but I have to admit the peace... like Cormac had autism.
His hands were down to his side. His face
was relaxed.
Was calm. Yeah.
His face was calm, but Cormac had really bad acne, okay. Really bad on his face and on his back. And because the blood wasn't flowing the same, the acne all looked like it had disappeared. And you have to think, you have to think about, I used to always say when Cormac was wee, I wish I could be Cormac for a day to see the world the way he sees it.
Yes.
He didn't eat food at all. Right. He took a Pediasure drink.
Okay.
So, and he would only take the drink at home. So when he would go to Little Angels in the morning, when the bus would come at 8 o'clock, he would have nothing until he came back at four.
Wow.
And no matter what they did, he wouldn't, you couldn't take
just
him anywhere.
His thing.
It's just his thing.
Yeah.
So all of that, you know, he wasn't toilet trained. He was going to be, he was only had 1 year left at Little Angels.
Then what was
so that? Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And that's very hard, because but that just makes you think, well, why was he born like that in the first place?
Yeah, I know. And that's the eternal struggle, isn't
but
it?
But you're right, there was a peace there. Yeah. I mean, and the Donegal Hospice sent over on the Friday a lovely blanket, like a pack. They were really lovely. They sent over a pack and there was a lovely blanket in it and wee tiny teddies for him to hold all that, you know.
Yeah.
But then the whole process of the organ donation starts then. The people came up from Dublin. She was called Emer, and you have to go through all these forms have to be filled in.
They could maybe come up with a different system. What then, because there's no guarantee that you know what happens with the organs you donate,
yeah,
I presume.
Yeah.
But you did receive a letter.
Yes.
I want to know what that was like.
That was very emotional. It was really emotional because for the person that wrote it, because they said in the letter, I know this is going to be very hard for you to read and it's very hard for me to write, but, and this is a line, I am alive because of your generosity.
Cormac's gift.
Mm, Cormac's gift. They said they were alive. They said they had lived. They had seen their first grandchild born.
Oh, wow.
And they were doing things that you and me take for granted. They were able to go out for their walks, go meet people for coffee.
Yes.
Go on holiday, live.
Is that Cormac's gift to them, or does part of you feel Cormac lives on within them?
Cormac lives on with them.
Is that how you
course,
feel? Because people
yes.
are going to have different
and
sense of feeling.
And he was a huge fan of Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
From an early age. Now, I'll admit he got that from me, yes, but he loved Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
He used to watch his DVDs, his live DVDs.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, if I was shouting in the house, he'd have his hands over his ears. When Bruce Springsteen's shouting on
hands
the concert, no problem at all. He loved Bruce Springsteen.
Character.
And so after it all was over, I thought to myself, I wonder, does the person that got the organ all of a sudden, you know, wake up some morning and start dancing to Bruce, you know, around the kitchen and not know why?
It's a lovely thing to consider, isn't it?
Well, you just wonder, like, how much, you know, gets passed on.
Of course.
But it doesn't matter. Look, the organs were no use to Cormac. And it's so, like, and as you said at the start, I had never considered organ donation or thought about it. But when I read that person's letter, I thought to myself, if everybody saw that letter, they would sign up to be an organ donor.
We've seen a dramatic drop in organ donations. I was always had my reservations, and I can't say it's because of this opt-out system that we have.
Yeah.
I think whenever you sort of give a level of compulsion or that feels like there's government overreach, there was a dramatic drop in 2024 as this conversation was ongoing. As I say, we can only speculate if that was connected or not. But we hope, don't we, that this conversation might cause people to reconsider.
Exactly. You have to, I know it's hard, but like as I've said, Cormac wasn't coming back. But somewhere on that day when they were going through the paperwork and getting ready to take Cormac's organs, somewhere in the country is a person with a family.
And a bag at the door.
And a bag at the door, waiting to go. And you have to think about their family as well as them. Like if it was your loved one, your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your child.
You'd move heaven and earth for them. Yeah.
You'd move heaven and earth. you know, so why take the organs? Wasn't the woman in Belfast that said you don't need your organs in heaven? No. And you really don't.
Yeah.
And I know it's frightening and people
I think people need to kind of, I think what for some people it depends when they believe that they've lost their loved one or what is the final moment. And also too, I've heard people sort of imagining what is happening in the removal of the organs, and yeah, that is the barrier. So people have their different barriers, but maybe this conversation and maybe people will get the comfort that you've received and understand that maybe it's actually going to benefit them. ika.ie/donorweek is the website. Has Bruce got a little bit more important to you now? Sounds like you're already a big fan, God. But I wonder.
I have actually written a letter, but I haven't sent it to him yet.
To let him
know, like, the impact he had.
Aww.
I mean, Cormac's speech therapist and occupational therapist when he was wee, they thought they only knew one Bruce Springsteen song.
Mm.
So,
lovely, handsome young lad, and what a gift this boy has given, and you have, and your partner has given. Because someone else is may be able to make memories
someone
now.
Someone else. I mean, I sometimes have thought, like, you know, what was I doing letting him take his organs? But Cormac the person was gone, you know.
Yeah.
He's away on a bucket swing that he had in Little Angels. He's away on a bucket swing somewhere with his assistance dog. He had an assistance dog. Right. He's away there, happy out.
Thanks so much, Fiona.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
Thanks for also sort of helping us get to know Cormac a bit too. It's lovely.
Oh, I have.
He's
a
lovely, lovely guy. He sounds amazing.
His teacher wrote a poem about him when he died. Okay. Michal, so this will let you know about the last day.
All right, okay. Cormac and Springsteen had one thing they both shared. The well-earned title, The Boss. Cormac was captain, chief and the head of the pack. Now, we will surely feel his loss. Cormac really loved being part of the crew with Reese, Rory, Mecky, Nico and Shane. We take solace and comfort in knowing that our sad loss is heaven's great gain. Bruce Springsteen sung that he was born to run while Cormac was born to walk. There was no lane too long, no mountain too high, but up that road Cormac would rock. On our last day with him, we went away out west and walked the golden sands of Gwydor. While the rest of us were happy to get back on the bus, Cormac wanted to go again, asking for more. On his beloved playground bucket swing, Cormac would reach up for the sky. I'm sure you're flying high now, my dearest Cormac. To our own little angel, we say our last goodbye. Cormac was happy when squeezed and hugged tight. Now he's safe in God's loving embrace. The walking is done. Now rest easy, my friend, in his love, mercy and eternal grace.
Thanks, Greg. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Greg, for having me on.
And I have in studio with me the hosts of the V&M podcast. It's Vinnie McLaughlin and Marty Brogan. How are you guys getting on?
Good, good.
Good, Greg.
Good to have you in. Are you kind of a little bit like Ant and Dec in that people know one of you is Vinny and one of you is Marty but don't know which one's which?
I think it's because of my forehead, they say that.
Your five head, what?
My forehead. my hairline's well back.
Lads, how long have you been doing this podcast now, Vinny, I'll ask you.
I think we're at it about three and a half years. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it at all, hey? Because we're just saying that now up the road and we're like, it doesn't seem like it at all.
What was the motivation?
To be fair, it's all Marty's idea.
You're mates, though.
Oh, like, oh
yeah, he's always been mates. I know him all my life, you see. But my wife bought me, I always like to talk.
Yeah, so, well, now, hold on a second. You've got a potty mouth. We're live on radio.
Yeah,
no, now,
100%.
Right?
I know that. Marty. No, I've been warned by family members.
I've got a shock collar on you now. Every F is two shots, S is one shot.
the wife bought me a podcast microphone.
Yeah.
But it lay there for a couple of years and then I was chatting to Vinny about it, and all fairness, he gave me the push. And we just started on our couch about 3.5 years ago and it's just took off.
Yeah, and Vinny, did you have an interest in it? Because I mean, obviously, you know, he's the one that had the built in interest, or maybe you did too.
Not really, to be honest. I never thought I'd do a podcast. I think
it's a good idea to do a two hander. I think that right. Well,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Not that one of you couldn't carry it, but you both bring different things to it, don't you?
No, I never. I didn't even listen to the podcast, to be fair, but it was Marty's idea. But I used to always do like wee TikTok videos and stuff, just nothing mad. Like, but when he had the idea, we just put it together. But he says it was just us two on a couch, and we had one camera on us, and we're just chatting. We don't even know what we're chatting about. And then, as he said, it just snowballed.
Well, see, that's the thing about podcasts. People sometimes just like to listen to, it doesn't have to be necessarily specifically defined. Now, it is with guests, don't get me wrong. But if people like you, you can just chat and people will listen.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and, you know, shows are prescribed. They can be half an hour long, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Podcasts, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, people out walking can listen to it too. But we kind of based it on a lot of mental health because there was suicide in our families, you know, and we like to sit down, two men chatting on the couch, and we think laughing is a big thing for you know, for mental health. We think laughing's grass.
Yeah, it is. It is right there. But we didn't even think of that the first couple of episodes until we had a couple of guests on and they were telling us their stories and stuff. And then we were like, maybe you took a step back and maybe there's something here. Like maybe we could. But
it also just the conversation. It is the conversation. It normalizes guys talking about stuff just casually. It doesn't have to be serious. Literally how you feel. Oh, this, that, and done.
That's exactly what it was. We were like just literally just sitting there. But then when we realised then that maybe, because we got a lot of messages about it and stuff, and we were like, maybe this is something. And then it just snowballed, and it turned out that us just talking about our experience helped others, and we were just talking. Literally,
you
see, talking.
You're normal. That's who you are, right?
Just,
and your audience knows that.
Okay. Yeah, as you know, we have no filter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, filter today, right. Marty. I'm looking at you now. The live shows, because that's the next step. Because I think that takes, I think it takes guts, because there's one thing pre-recorded in your studio. Another thing is, right, we're actually going to see, will anyone turn up? Can we sort of get that same vibe in a live setting? When was the first live show, Marty?
It was, we did it in the cinema. We did it for Donegal Hospice. And 110 and all money we made went to Donegal Hospice. But we were nervous, like. But once you get on and get, the worst part was the music played too long. We were standing in front of the crowd and we're standing out there and we're trying to get
like
the music off.
Music? Yeah.
But you know what I mean? We're standing us here, me and Vinny, and the music wasn't going off and everybody's looking. It's your first time in front of a big audience, really.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But it went so well then. But once you get a bit of laugh and a bit of crack, then you start to get comfortable.
Yeah, but as you say, when you have to put yourself out there and get people to go buy tickets and stuff, our first couple, we kind of give the tickets away.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, the 100, people actually have to go and buy their tickets for it.
This is for the show that's coming up in June.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the 100th episode special. It's in the Ballot Arts Centre. And you can get your tickets from theballotartcentre.com. Donegal Airport are on board with your podcast now, I think, aren't they? They're sponsoring us or supporting us, which is fantastic. Now, It starts at 8 p.m. and there's a great lineup of guests actually. So, who wants to pick up the guests here?
I'll take them. We have singer songwriter John Doherty.
He's brilliant,
unbelievable.
He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Did you hear the Homes at Donegal version?
Can't say for sure.
Oh my god!
That version actually, who done it with them was Grainne Gavigan.
Yeah,
and she's also a special guest as well. We actually can't wait because we think they're the bags of talent they have is incredible.
Yeah, and a bit of I know Grainne is very diverse, but it's going to be an interesting collab there.
Yeah.
Cathair O'Hagan.
Yeah,
comedian.
He's a comedian. Me and Marty were actually at a comedy show one night, and we seen this lad, and the tears are tripping us like he was funny.
He just took a speed. You know when you look at somebody, you don't think they're funny, but oh geez, we were laughing.
He was brilliant. So we kind of kept in touch, I don't think we ever spoke to him, but we kind of followed him on social media and stuff. And we actually messaged him and said, look, we have a big episode or a big live show coming up. We would love for you to come on, do whatever. He's like, no bar, lads.
Brilliant.
So we're buzzing fat.
And Michael Conlon, interesting character.
Boxer Michael Conlon,
He is a very interesting.
You get the background. You're not only getting comedy, music,
that's it,
and a boxer, you're getting their background and their stories.
So that's what I was going to ask you next. The format, are you going to, is it like, take them on, have a chat with, or like, are you going to chat to John and Grainne, or are they providing the entertainment? Is a mixture of both, or what way he's doing it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Actually, we're going to open it, and then obviously we'll have a guest come out each time. Maybe if John or Grainne wants to do a song for us or whatever, and then
chat.
Just now, it's just, you know what, Greg, I'm not lady. It's just really, really relaxed. That's all we're going for.
Well, that's it. I mean, you want it to be you. for it to be authentic, it has to be like that.
Yeah,
it's just like authentic to you guys, if you know what I mean.
That's something different. That's you know what I mean? Yeah. There's something different. You're not just getting music; you're getting a chat and their
sport,
background.
Sport, because whilst Michael obviously was a great boxer, obviously isn't involved in the promotion now and that type of thing. But it's a great insight just into the mind of a sports person, whether you like boxing or not. It's still going to be a fascinating conversation. Cahir brings the laughs, and Grania and John, two of the most talented young artists, if they don't mind me saying so. Right, so it is on June 12th, 7:30 p.m. It's in the Bala Arts Centre. Your previous shows weren't in a theatre, were they? Or perhaps they were.
No.
Is this the first time you've sold
it? The first one was in the Century Cinema.
Okay.
And then we did in the backstage or the pub.
I think this is going to really work for your format, this.
Yeah.
We've always wanted the theatre.
Because people are in with you. They're around, so it's
We wanted the, I think, the theatre set up, didn't we? We want the auditorium.
We're
working
with Jason Quigley now, too. Like, he manages it, so it gives
I kind of figured out how you got Michael on the bill, because I was wondering, is Jason...
No, we got him ourselves.
I
would know him personally. Like, my sister lives in the Falls Road. So she does, in fairness.
I'd have a few questions for him myself, actually. He's a fascinating character.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Do you get your tickets now, soon as you
It's just recent retired, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably should have retired a couple of fights ago, if the truth be told, but he had this dream, right? He nearly won one of the fights.
He got unlucky, wasn't he?
Got knocked out.
He was fighting Lee Wood. Was it Lee Wood?
Yeah,
that's it.
He was fighting Lee Wood a miles ahead on the cards, 10th round, knocked out of the ring.
That's a lot to take that,
Very
you
tough.
You know what I mean?
Comeback.
When you're
very
that
tough
close.
Back for that.
He was bad.
And these guys also, every fight, you leave something in the ring, and that was one of those fights where I think he left a lot of it.
It's hard to come back from that. Yeah.
Fascinating. Anyway, listen, you're going to tease all of that out, psychology and everything else with him. Right, so get your tickets, folks. BalaArtsCentre.com, June 12th, 7:30 p.m. It's the 100th episode special. The guest, John Doherty, super talented, John is, as is Grania Gavigan. Cahir O'Hagan will have your sides split, and Michael Conlon talking boxing, sport. Everything. I'd say he's got a lot to say about the whole noggin as well, too. Lads, anything you want to add?
We just want to give a massive shout out to Donegal Airport, who's come on and is our main sponsor now. We were just chatting last day, as we were saying, about snowballing, and it just made us take a step back and just realise what we actually have made here. Do you know, as we approach our 100th episode, but the likes of an establishment come on and back us,
you two
it's
guys,
just
yeah.
it's just amazing. And it makes us think that... There's something,
there's something there,
and we are proud of it. And it takes something like that. They take a chance on us, because you say we are a wee bit non-faltered, but we mean no harm. But
we're out there.
It's incredible. It's incredible. The season
going so good. He's gone so good with the airport. We've grown him.
I have to do it.
Everybody's messaging me before I come on here. No filter. I know.
Can I say I'm so proud of you?
Thank you very much.
I really am, but my word, the rest of the day you're going to be effing and blinding.
Can I have a golden star before I leave?
You're 10 minutes from the bad to do 98 episodes.
Okay, now I'm going to take a break to put on some antiperspirant again. lads, Vinny, Marty, well done in what you're doing. It's a fantastic thing. It's the V&M podcast. It's live. It's the 100th episode special, June 12th, 7:30 p.m. Great guests, the Ballot Arts Centre. Get your tickets now and then you'll know what you're doing on that date.
Business Matters is brought to you by Print Supplies. Based in Frosses, Print Supplies has 21 years experience delivering managed print solutions that save you time and money. With remote monitoring and local hands-on support, they take the hassle out of printers and photocopiers. Email sales@printsupplies.ie to find out more.
Now, we have an incredibly diverse business community in this region. And in fairness to Chris Ashwell, the presenter of the Business Matters, he shines a light on all of it. And this week, glamping is in your headlights.
That's right, Greg. Now, glamping has got very popular, as we know, in recent times. So I decided to find out more about a glamping business. In the heart of the West Donegal Gaeltacht, Glamping Rannafairsta has a number of the really lovely shepherd's huts, each of which has its own private outdoor hot tub right beside it.
Okay.
Fueled by local wood, really modern inside. It's in a lovely little hollow. And since it opened, it's received very positive feedback and indeed is in the top 1% when it comes to ratings and reviews with Airbnb.
Did you stay or...?
No, I was down during the day, but okay. I was very impressed. And we have a little clip here from Eileen Gallagher, who talks about the business and indeed the huts.
We decided that we'd open a small, niche little glamping site with three lovely little shepherd huts. We did quite a lot of research, wanted to find the right product to put in place. And then when we happened upon these, we kind of knew this was the right thing. This is kind of a little hidden gem within Ranafast. From a local amenities perspective, we're very well placed for some really good local pubs and that serve great food, and also very close to the beaches, close to Errigal, and then Crawley Distillery, which is down the road. So really supporting the local businesses. We always try and encourage people to shop locally, go to the local places.
Yeah, it's an ecosystem, isn't it, Chris? And that's a great addition to it in that beautiful part of the world.
Absolutely. And, you know, she's an interesting story herself. Came back from London, strong links with the area, and has really made a go of this and linking up well with the other businesses, as she mentions there. Their first person, when they put it online to open up, their first guest was an Australian.
So. There you go. But can you imagine coming to this country or coming from in this country and having that experience? I mean, you know, you lock that one in, and it's not a bit wonder. I haven't been there or seen it, by the way, but I can imagine it, because given the location and how you describe these huts, it doesn't surprise me that they've rated or ranked so high in reviews with Airbnb. The full interview with Eileen Gallagher is going to be part of this week's podcast, which is available for you today, and people then can listen back. Can listen on the radio on Sunday. Let's grab some news because some good success for a local business person in the winning a CEO award, and it's a prestigious one, Chris.
Yes, indeed. Larissa Feeney of the chartered accountancy firm Knorr. She's been named as the CEO of the Year at the prestigious PwC Image Business Woman of the Year Awards. Now, she's a former president of the Donegal Women in Business Network. We featured her here on this show in the past.
You spotted the talent early on.
The founder of Knorr, which was Ireland's first online remote first finance and business services firm. It's considerably... Well, it's had huge growth, doubled its workforce, and so her success continues.
Okay, some recognition, well-deserved recognition for a well-known Letterkenny man.
Yes, last week, retired businessman Ben Sweeney was honoured at a special mayor's reception in Letterkenny in recognition of his outstanding contribution to business. Ben Sweeney Electrical Premises in Letterkenny and Dunloe, company going for over 55 years. And the mayor, Councillor Kieran Brogan, congratulated Ben Sweeney and spoke about, you know, the influence, the impact, the contribution that he has made. And many people over the years will have bought appliances from him.
And a street party, what's going on?
Yeah, now Ballybuffet and Stranorlar Chamber of Commerce, they're backing a Navanny street party in Ballybuffet. It's taking place on Sunday, the 31st of May. There's actually a public meeting next Monday in Gallon's Lounge for the final organisation. Last year they had a reunion which raised over 4,000 for charity. This is a follow-up event. More businesses getting involved. There'll be music, there'll be food on the street, and a real community effort, and the Chamber really pushing it. And just to note that the road will be closed for much of the day, so there'll be some traffic disruption.
Brilliant stuff, Chris. Now, the podcast, just to go back to that, available today for people to listen at their leisure. It's on Spotify and also Apple Podcasts, and available too then for people on Sunday, just after the 6 o'clock news. And if they wish to contact you,
best way is by email, so the address is businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it. And thank you at home, at work, wherever you are, out in the car. We really do appreciate you listening to the show, and for those of you who watched it as well. But that is where we have to leave it for today. We're back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll kick off with the Friday panel and so much more besides. But have a fantastic Thursday.